Welcome into another episode of Mid Michigan Matters. This podcast is designed to go behind the scenes at what our local nonprofit organizations are doing in our community.
Welcome into another Mid Michigan Matters podcast. This episode is brought to you by the DJ LLC. They cover everything. They will host your next trivia night, birthday party, wedding, even baby showers. You can follow them on Facebook for more information. It's the DJ LLC, transforming every event into a sonic celebration, leaving everyone with a symphony of memories. All right, it's Liz from the My Morning Show on My 104.3, and today we have a very special guest with us, Melanie Starks, coming all the way from Hollywood just to talk to us and also have her Michigan premiere. Welcome on in. Thank you so much for having me. Yeah, of course. And so you're here for
the Central Michigan International Film Festival.
Yes. And what is your movie?
My movie is Fluorescent Beast, and it's showing on Friday at 9:30 on April 5th. And it's a surreal black comedy, and we're super excited to have it at the film festival.
And you're a CMU alum, so
I am.
This is like coming home. And I guess, what does that mean for you?
It's weird. I mean, it makes me think like hometown girl makes good, you know?
That
I got my degree, my major was in theater, and now I'm back home with a movie I produced. So it just feels very sort of full circle and cool.
So this is your first Central Michigan International Film Festival?
That's right.
Okay. It is. Wow, that's so exciting. And how long has it been since you've been back in Michigan?
Well, I come twice a year because family here. Okay. Absolutely. And I love it. I love coming back. Michigan's awesome. I don't think enough people know.
No, I agree.
Maybe we should keep it a little bit of a secret, but maybe some people should know.
And so you produced this film.
I did.
Could you tell us exactly what a producer's job is for some people who may not know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, you're there to do anything you can to help the filmmaker manifest the vision of their film. So they, you know, somebody writes it, you bring a whole team together to figure out who's going to direct it, who's going to edit it, who's going to produce it, who the actors are, the director of photography, who's doing sound, like all of those different things. And as the producer, you have to get contracts, you know, set up with the actors union, with the actors. You have to pull permits for when you're videoing when you're shooting on location. Video. Oh my God, I can't even say it. I'm a child of the 80s and 70s. And so you have to do all these different things. And if it's a low budget film, anything you'd hire anyone else to do, you have to do as well. So you're doing craft services, which are like, of course, you know this, the snacks that are served during. And
which is
catering.
Very important.
It's important. When you're doing low budget, you need to make sure your people are fed well.
Or else you're going to have some hangry actors and directors.
Hangry, you're exactly right.
Yeah.
You're right. So it's just all of those things. And then if something goes wrong in the middle of the shoot, our sound guy, Joe, needed this attachment for his microphone that was going to be outside, one of those fluffy things. I can't even remember what it's called. Fluffy microphone attachment. And of course, I just went flying off to get it because you're just doing all of those things to make sure that the film is completed in the way that you want it, that you achieve the vision of the filmmaker.
Okay. So I guess, is this a bad term? You can tell me. Like an operations manager for the film?
Well,
is that a good term or no?
Well, I think no. I mean, I think it's just producer. There's also something called a line producer.
Okay.
And that's very much everything overlaps, and it depends on if you're doing television or if you're doing film. But there isn't an operations manager, but maybe that'd be more like a line producer. But again, in low budget, you're doing all of it.
Right.
And just making sure everything is getting done, staying on track. And our filmmaker, Paul Osborne, he wrote it, he directed it, he edits it. So he's really the vision behind it. And it's making sure that what he has in his head happens.
So with this movie, Fluorescent Beast, what was the most challenging and what was the most rewarding for your experience?
Yeah, that's great. So the most challenging was we shot over 6 months in little increments, which was really cool. But I think the most challenging thing, not just starting up and up again, at like doing a feature, but in post-production, we had huge problems with color. And we literally got stuck in color for almost 2 years. Now, it was also during COVID. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like this is the kind of film maybe that you want to bring out during COVID, because it's so much about the day-to-day of going to work and the grind of that. And you know how all of our lives just, of course, you know this, went upside down over COVID.
Of course, yeah.
So, but that was the most challenging. And then the most gratifying was working with this team and making something that I'm just incredibly proud of.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
No divas on set or
not
anything.
Not a diva to be found.
Well,
a diva free zone.
When did you know that you wanted to be in film or just the entertainment industry? Did you always know? Was it kind of like an epiphany when you were a teenager? Or?
You know, I think as early as 10, I wanted to be an actor. And I always, always wanted to be an actor. I thought I was going to go do musical theater in New York. And then I graduated from undergraduate at Central Michigan University and wasn't ready for the real world.
Right.
So I ended up getting a master's degree in dance, which was my minor at Central. And I moved out to the Bay Area and went to Mills College, which was an incredible experience. And that's what got me out to California. And I think always in my mind, I was still going to be an actor. That's what I was thinking about doing. And I eventually moved down to Los Angeles and was in an acting class and trying to get a manager and an agent and doing all that kind of stuff. And then I started working with the Frank Zappa estate, the Zappa Trust, and got into music production. And by working with Gail Zappa, this is a long answer to your question.
No.
I started learning so many things about production and having to do so many things at the same time and multitasking. And that really is what taught me about producing. And then I met Paul Osborne, our filmmaker, through my partner, Patrick Day, who's also in the film. He plays Mr. Hayden. And they've done movies together before. And I sort of got on board with them and was able to produce. And I've produced some independent series and I've produced a play. So I don't know. I think it's the acting thing. I'm good at it, but and that sounds terrible to say, maybe.
No,
but,
not at all.
But I don't love it, if that makes sense.
No,
I feel like I take on all this responsibility of doing this amazing job. I can't just go into the play of it. If I'm working with friends, then I can. But if I'm showing up to a set and I did this once. It was the last day of shooting. They all knew each other so well. I showed up. And it was a comedy, but I was this surgeon letting someone know that they had cancer and couldn't have children and was going to have a hysterectomy.
Oh,
and
my
I was
gosh.
Like this giant monologue with all this medical terminology. And I was so freaked out and like worried about letting them down. And I almost was like, this feels as hard as online dating. I was like, whoa. And with the producing, it's just different for me. I like to problem solve, and writing is really fun for me as well.
Okay. So it challenges you more, I guess, like producing in like better
in different ways.
Ways
or ways that I feel more comfortable with, that just like, you know, knocking bowling pins down. I'm like, got it. That's a strike, and bring them back up. And I just checking things off.
Yeah, that's exactly
I don't know.
What
I'm
I was going to say.
I love just that. Destiny. I don't know.
Oh, my gosh. I love that so much. And so I guess what was your first Hollywood experience?
That's such a really good question. You know, I mean, does that mean?
And I guess whatever it means to you, when were you, maybe just a moment that you realized this is what I'm
this
meant
is what
to
I'm
do?
Doing.
Yep. Or I can't believe I'm working with this person, or
you
went
know,
to this red carpet event.
I mean, those things are always wild when you go and you have your picture on the red carpet or something like that. And it's not like I've done a ton of those. But I think I had a lot of these jobs that, you know, I worked in the hotel business for a while. I worked in PR at Fox Broadcasting, you know, during the 90210 days. But I was on the corporate side of things. And I left that and I was sort of doing alternative things ever since. So even when I was working, you know, with the Zappas, it wasn't, it was very much a full-time job, but it was sort of, I was working in rock and roll. And so it was creative. I mean, that was my day job, was in rock and roll,
that's
which is
amazing.
Insane. And so it just sort of, it was never a moment where this is what I'm doing. It just was. It was just my day to day. And the people that you would meet and the rock musicians you would meet and these incredibly talented people. And it was just an incredible experience. And I found that's just what my life became. So I don't even know if there was like a ding, ding, ding. It was just like you wake up one day 10 years later and you're like, what have I been doing all this time? And I'm so lucky to have this experience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to hear because I feel like some people are like, oh my gosh, you worked in rock and roll and you met all these people. Like, what? And you're like, that was just my day to day. Like, it doesn't faze you because you're just living in that moment. And you're right. You're going to work. This is my job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the people are incredible. I've met such wildly, wildly just charismatic and talented people. So very lucky.
Any real big challenging moments in the industry itself? I know I lived in Hollywood for a bit. I went to acting school and everything. I do know it is a cutthroat industry.
Yeah.
It's hard. You have to knock down doors and
you do,
you know, really put yourself out there. And if you're not keeping up on work and getting jobs, then you're forgotten about.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing is overall in the entertainment industry, if we all, and I don't mean this in a bad way at all, but if we all go to college and we want to become a teacher, if we want to become an architect, a dentist, if we go to a trade school and we want to become, you know, a mechanic or anything you can think of, if you get that education, whether it's a degree or a certificate, you can go out and make your living doing that job. And in the entertainment industry, it doesn't really matter how good you are.
Right.
There's a lot of luck. There's a lot of, you know, meeting the people that make things
right place.
Possible.
Right place, right time,
right training, all of it together. And so that part is the overall thing that's so difficult about the entertainment industry because there are no guarantees.
Right.
You can come in with all the experience and sometimes it just doesn't matter. And it's if all those things align. And if they don't, you know what? Never give up. Just keep trying and it'll happen for you. And maybe it won't happen in the biggest, like, you know, target community. Like maybe that's Hollywood. Maybe it's Broadway in New York. But maybe it's in a smaller place like Atlanta or Detroit. And these are huge booming places where you can have a career. So just don't give up, even though it's challenging. And it's all challenging.
And talking to someone who went to school for this, you have your BA and MFA. Is that correct?
Yes.
Did I miss anything else?
You did.
Okay, great.
That's enough.
How much do you think school prepared you for the real world?
I think school let me do that deep dive into acting and get some experience in production, right? And I think the academic side of it is really great, and that you get to work with different directors. All of that is really cool. And I just feel lucky for the people that I worked with and people that were so incredibly talented at CMU, both the students and the faculty. But I think you also then absolutely need to go out and have your mind open to taking the other half of the non-academic and getting sort of into the reality of it. And so as an actor, I studied a lot of Stanislavski,
yes.
And which was incredible. But my mindset got to this point where I was like, oh, if I just had, you know how you used to have like a little box when everything wasn't digital and it would have recipes in it. And I was like, if I could have every single action written out, I'd always know. And it was just this mindset that I needed to divorce myself from and be like, sometimes that's going to be a tool that's going to be incredible and help me. But sometimes I'm going to see a role and know exactly and get that character just by my own life experience. And so not using a tool, the same tools for every single thing, picking out a tool when you need it. So the academia like really gave me my base, but then going there and having the experience like fills the other 50% of it. And you've got to have both.
Right. Because when I went to acting school, I felt the same way. Like they give you all of these wonderful tools. We studied Meisner as well. And amazing. But then when I was rehearsing, you know, by myself in my apartment with my roommates,
absolutely,
we always found new ways to really dive into the character or the script. And I do think school is so important. And some people may argue that it's not in this industry,
right,
depending on what you want to do anyway. But again, it's about right place, right time.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree with you.
So where did the inspiration come for this movie, Fluorescent Beast?
I think for Paul, because he wrote it, it came from how do you manage the public side or the personal family side and the corporate side of who you are and who you have to show up as every day, and your artistic side, and whether you're a writer or a painter or you're a fisherman or you're a yogi, like whatever that side is, or a spiritual side, and like how do you achieve them both, and you know, never give up and make sure that you keep that artist part of you alive. And so that's kind of like the very, very root of it. And then Paul went wild and did a magnificent job. The script is so good. And everything from there was just great.
And so when they wrote this movie, he wrote this movie, did he reach out to you and say, hey, I need a producer, or you guys
question.
Were friends? Or
I do know him, and I acted in the movie he did before. It's called Cruel Hearts, and I had a small part. And my partner, Patrick Day, was one of the stars of that movie. And he's in this movie as Mr. Hayden as well in Fluorescent Beast. But I actually came on after the table read. So Paul's wife, Leslie, also produced. Leslie Osborne, she's fabulous. And they needed sort of the on-set producer. And I did a lot of, you know, different aspects of it. But after the table read, the second producer wasn't able to do it anymore. So I jumped in like, you know, parachute, all in, because they were already going. So they had cast it. But other than that, you know, we hadn't done it. And so Patrick suggested to Paul, because he knew I had produced some independent series and a play, Melanie might want to do it. And Paul reached out, do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah, I want to do it. And so that's how I got involved.
That's awesome. So you guys have been working on this movie for a few years.
Yes, like 2018.
Oh, my gosh.
And then we had that big, like, Dawn Brody, one of our actresses, she had a baby, and the baby's 5 now, you know? And she was coming to set and having to take breaks to pump because the baby was so little, she was still nursing. So it's just like, that's the thing, too. You know, we watch movies and we see them come out, and celebrities come out, and they go on all the talk shows, right? And they're promoting them. But they're, like, on their second movie since that film, or their third film.
Exactly.
And it just, you hearken back to, it's just a different time. It's this timestamp of this part of your life. And we shot that so pre-COVID, and it's just wild to think about the difference.
I love how movies can be filmed a few years ago.
Yeah.
And just, I love that they're still relevant today.
Yes.
It still makes
sense. The good ones are.
Exactly.
You're exactly right. And they can be such a time capsule. Like, even if they're very current, but some of these, you know, like Office Space or whatever, these movies that are like, you know, a time stamp in our life, you go back and you're like, oh, and sometimes they don't stand the test of time. You're like, what is that?
Right. Sometimes I watch old sitcoms and I'm like, that joke doesn't hit anymore.
Yeah. Nope. Yeah.
But I love those movies that leave an impact on you.
Absolutely.
And I watched this trailer for Fluorescent Beast, and it definitely left an impact on me. I said,
so
I want to see it. You guys definitely have to check it out. Where can they find the trailer?
If you go to conspicuouspictures.com, you can find Fluorescent Beast there. And you can also see a couple other movies that Paul directed and wrote. And he used to shoot them as well and edit them.
Oh.
This one he didn't shoot. I know. It's like, how many hats does that
man
have to wear? All the hats. So conspicuouspictures.com, you can go there and you can see the trailer to Fluorescent Beast.
And you can find that in the notes. And so I guess my last question would be, what would you say and what advice would you give to someone wanting to pursue a career in the industry? And that means film, commercials, just the entertainment industry as a whole.
I think,
because you've done it all.
I've done a lot of it. I think, and I'm going to speak to actors specifically, but But I think if you get out to Los Angeles as an actor, and I think this segues into everything, if you get out there, you need to get into a community. But the first thing you need to do as an actor is you need to get into class, and you need to audit a bunch of classes and find one that resonates with you. Don't go out there and think, oh, I did the college thing. I mean, you were probably not even doing film and TV acting. And so you want to get out there and get in a class. Yes, it's great to be on stage in a theater and do that, but do some film acting because it's different. You're not out there doing really big stuff. It's much smaller. Get out there, get in class, work with people, do shorts with people, do student films, get a reel. You know, after you do that, then people that are on your same level can refer you to an agent. And you have to do all these things. And also get out there, find a place to live that is inexpensive, have a reliable car, and get a day job that's flexible. And if you can do all those things and you really like it and you stick it out, you can have success and experience. And it could be that way with anything. You find that community and do smaller things and take step by step and just increase it, you know? And that's what I would say.
I think that's wonderful advice, because when I was 18 and moved out to LA, I wish someone told me those words.
Me too.
I wish I wasn't as naive when I was 18 and moving out to California.
Yeah.
And I just got there and said, wow. Look at all the lights.
Yeah. What do I do now?
Exactly. Yeah. And then can they find you anywhere?
They can. You know, my website is melaniestarks.com, and it sort of gives you a little overview of what I've been doing and what I'm doing next and what I'm working on. And yeah, melaniestarks.com.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. This was so fun.
I had so much fun. I'm glad you enjoyed it, too.
You're great to talk to.
Thank you. And your Fluorescent Beast movie is premiering April 5th
at 9:30 p.m. at Celebration Cinema.
Thank you so much, Melanie.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Mid-Michigan Matters. While you're here, feel free to browse earlier episodes or other podcast programs on our platform. Listen to what you will and spread the word. Thanks again for listening.